From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we're bringing back a story about a police investigation into a report of sexual assault. But this isn't your typical case. What makes it stand out is who the police arrested, not the alleged perpetrator. They arrested the alleged victim. And we should note, again, this episode may not be appropriate for all listeners. We can't know from our investigation whether a sexual assault actually occurred, but we can review how the police decided to charge Nicole Chase with a crime and how she and her attorney fight back. Reveal reporter Rachel DeLeon takes it from here.
Today, Nicole lives in a small town not far from where she used to work. It's a cute neighborhood. The houses are spaced out. She's got half an acre around her. When we pull up, Lou Chimes, her attorney, is standing in the driveway.
Welcome to the Northeast.
Hi.
We got some snow.
The ground is covered in 5 inches of snow, and Nicole's house is cozy. She keeps apologizing for the mess, only the place is tidy. It is a full house, though. She lives here with her fiancé, two kids, and a brand new addition.
Yeah. Lou!
What?
Lou, go get it.
Hi, sweetie.
What's his name? What's the...
Blue. I just got a puppy. His name is Blue. Yes, right now is the potty training and the nipping and the chewing of everything.
Nicole surprised her fiancé with Blue a few weeks back. It was his dream to have bloodhounds someday. This house goes back generations. It's where she and her mom both grew up. And now she owns it. Her kids walk the same road she used to go to school.
I feel like I'm doing good, but I'm hoping that I just keep working on myself more and more, and I hope that I somehow just become just better than I already have.
Before Nicole even worked at Nodine's restaurant, she'd been through some really tough experiences, including teenage drug addiction and domestic violence. Then came that night at Nodine's in 2017, which led to her arrest. She sought out the help of different lawyers, and one of them posted about her case online. Lou sees the lawyer's message and wants to know more.
I looked at the arrest warrant for Nicole, and I hadn't met Nicole yet. And then I read it and reread it two or three times, and then I called the lawyer back and I says, am I missing something?
Nicole's criminal defense attorney is also astounded by the charge and tells prosecutors it's outrageous. The prosecutor agrees to drop the case as long as Nicole doesn't get into any other legal trouble before the next court date. The arrest is erased from her record. But Lou doesn't think that should be the end of it. He also believes Nicole could have a strong civil case against the Cannes Police Department, so he sets up a meeting with her.
I was just astonished at what I was hearing.
Lou specializes in employment and personal injury law, but he knows police culture. He's sued police, he's represented police, and was once a prosecutor for the Manhattan DA.
I spent 15 minutes deciding whether I wanted to represent Nicole, and the hour and 45 minutes of the rest of the two-hour meeting kind of seeing myself cross-examining the police officers in the case.
Nicole says it was news to her that she could go after the officers and the town for turning her into a suspect.
But once they said it was something I could do, it was like, yeah, absolutely. They just arrested me for nothing.
So Lou lets the town know he intends to file a civil suit. And the town council decides to launch an internal affairs investigation at the police department. It's an important moment because the police officers will have to explain their actions.
Okay, today is May 31st. It's approximately 8:08 in the morning. We're here for the interview of Detective John Colangelo.
You're hearing the voice of Canton's chief of police, Christopher Arciero. It took a long time to get these recordings. We had to fight for them for well over a year. The men are sitting in a drab conference room inside the police station.
I wanted to show you some of your training records.
The chief pulls out printed PowerPoint slides.
And I'll just read a couple of them. It talks about the victims might share information that is not consistent, not true, or not complete. But that doesn't mean it's a false report. Does that ring a bell to your recollection or your general?
It doesn't mean it's a true report either, does it?
It's hard to hear, but Colangelo is defensive and says, doesn't mean it's a true report either, does it? The chief keeps going.
And this is also true, sometimes victims of sexual assault, you know, manifest certain behaviors, they're in shock, they're somewhat traumatized.
I'm not a psychiatrist.
What's that?
I'm not a psychiatrist. Okay. You're asking me psychological questions.
Soon the questioning turns to Colangelo's interview with Calvin Nodine, who Nicole has accused of a sex crime. He's a suspect in a police investigation. And the chief wants to know why Colangelo is giving him so much leeway.
At the beginning of the interview, you told him he was free to leave. Why'd you tell him he was free to leave?
Because it was a criminal interview, and he was a suspect at the time.
So you give him that warning to someone who's a suspect, they're free to leave if you have him in for an interview.
Yes. I try to always do that.
Then the chief asks Colangelo if he gave Nicole that same warning.
She wasn't a suspect.
She was never a suspect at any point in time during your interview?
I needed to bring her in to go over the things that he said to see what matched and didn't match.
Okay. Any point in time during your interview, if she became a suspect, did you tell her she was free to leave?
I don't recall.
Okay.
Colangelo giving Calvin seemingly preferential treatment is brought up several times in this 3-hour-long interview. Another example is when Colangelo tells Calvin that he usually gives a suspect a base on balls for the first false statement. I'm not a baseball person, so I asked around. What he means is giving a pass for the first lie.
So did you ever tell her that I typically would give a base on balls for the first false statement?
No, because the problem with that is twofold.
First, Colangelo argues that he didn't know Nicole's statement was false.
I didn't know that she gave a false statement until she broke down and cried and said, I gotta tell you, I gave it from oral sex.
And then he argues something different, that no two people are alike.
They're like fingerprints or snowflakes. No person gets interviewed the same. I mean, should I, from now on, every interview I do in there, say, if you give a false statement, you get a base on balls? No, it's statements that I make are done to elicit the truth.
Colangelo relies on this a lot. The idea that he's only being chummy with Calvin because he's trying to get him to confess to what really happened.
Within the first 5 or 10 minutes of the interview, you say to Calvin Nodine that you're not sure you believe everything that she's telling me.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you give him that statement? Doesn't that leave
you're
him...
You're picking out statements. I mean...
You can explain it.
I'm going to explain it.
Again, Colangelo leans on the idea that he's bluffing to draw out the truth.
And I'm going to tell you, and I hate to do it on tape, but here's my message. Who are you going to tell your darkest secrets? Someone you like or someone you hate? You're going to tell it to someone you like, so you do your best to find a bond with them.
It's kind of an old law enforcement trope, the good cop that makes you feel safe. Colangelo's right. Police experts say it's one way to get people to talk. But then once they do start talking, you want them to keep talking. One experienced investigator told me you should listen closely for inconsistencies and for things that sound absurd or implausible. And during that pivotal moment when Calvin changes his story and says there was consensual oral sex, Colangelo does little to follow up.
Well, what details did he give you about how the oral sex occurred?
He said they were in the bathroom and she gave him oral sex.
Do you know how he got into the bathroom?
The two of them closing or something. I don't recall exactly.
Do you know how his pants came down?
I don't recall exactly.
Do you recall, you know, where he was positioned in the bathroom?
No, I don't recall.
You don't recall? You didn't ask those questions?
I don't know. I don't recall. So I don't recall if I asked him or not.
Okay.
Colangelo didn't ask those questions during his hour-long interview with Calvin. And when Calvin later calls to say that he failed a private polygraph, there's also no follow-up.
Did you ever ask to get the results of that first polygraph?
No, I didn't.
Why not?
Because they're not admissible in court, because I know he's going to say no, and you're not going to get it on a search warrant because it's not evidence of a crime, seeing that it's not admissible in court.
Well, again, is it necessarily have to be admissible in court for you to use it for impeachment purposes or evidentiary purposes or other leads to follow up on purposes?
I wanted to talk to Colangelo myself. I called, texted, emailed. Finally, his attorney responded. She'd advised that he not talk to me, but said he acted appropriately at all times. I also tried to reach Officer Gomper, the first officer Nicole spoke with, but he never responded. In the internal affairs interview, Colangelo gets increasingly defiant with the chief.
You see, this investigation you're doing, you're trying to fit me into a theory that you have. I don't. I sit back and I let people tell me what happened, and that's the truth. Is Calvin Nodine a crass individual? He is. There's no question about it. He's not very likable in my opinion, but I'm sure some people do like him. Certainly, if there was a probable cause for an arrest for Calvin, or I developed it, he would have been arrested. Calvin Nodine is not my friend, and I'm not doing him any favors. I'm following what the truth is.
The irony is that Colangelo's quest for the truth is a win for Calvin. But it's Nicole who thanks Colangelo during her interview with him at the police station.
Thank you for, being here for me, but also thank you for making me be able to come out and say it to somebody what really happened.
This was a breakthrough moment for Nicole. She felt like she had finally admitted the full extent of her sexual assault. Months would pass after that interview, and there would be no further action by the police except to write up her arrest warrant.
If I had only knew what he had been doing, and I would have never thanked him for that. I would have never told him.
In a court deposition, Nicole shared that she will never report a crime to the Canton Police Department again. And many others share her distrust of police. According to research, 70% of sexual assault crimes go unreported. And the fear of not being believed is one of the many reasons why.
In the end, the Internal Affairs investigation found that Detective Colangelo should have told prosecutors Nicole tried to revise her statement. It also dinged him for letting Nicole believe she was a victim when a warrant was already out for her arrest. Colangelo was suspended for 3 days without pay. Then he turned around and sued the town, claiming he'd been scapegoated in a, quote, sham internal affairs investigation to appease the Me Too movement for political gain. The judge dismissed the case. Still, the internal affairs investigation did uphold Colangelo's decision to arrest Nicole, and it claims that the Connecticut State Police reviewed the case too and found Colangelo was also justified in not arresting Calvin.
That's absolutely false.
Wow. Okay.
We find out what one state investigator really thought about the case next on Reveal.